Very welcome to International Report. Today, in the second of our short series on cleaning up 33 years after the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, RFI's Dhananjay Kadlikar speaks to Adam Higginbotham, author of the book Midnight in Chernobyl.
It has been 33 years since the Chernobyl nuclear disaster took place. This incident has attracted attention again this year because of the release of a TV series and the book Midnight in Chernobyl. This book provides a compelling account of the lead-up to the explosion of reactor number 4, its causes, and the aftermath. Adam Higginbotham, who authored the book, said one of the reasons he wrote the history of the Chernobyl disaster was to address the myths and inaccuracies associated with it.
There's a great number of these kind of horrible myths that have developed around the story of Chernobyl. You know, like the idea that's once again become current because of the Chernobyl television series, which has sort of given new life to a lot of these ideas, like the Bridge of Death, for example. There's this idea that lots of people who lived in the town of Pripyat, the Atomgrad that was built to accommodate the workers who worked at the plant and their families, that they went out in the middle of the night to watch this nuclear plant burn from 3 kilometers away, and that subsequently everybody who went out onto the bridge to watch this happen, you know, had died of the effects of radiation poisoning. And this is just nonsense. It's one of these, like a lot of the other part of the story, that have little basis in reality. It appeals to the notions that people imagine might have happened in an accident like this, but that for years nobody ever bothered to kind of follow up and check out to see whether they had any basis in reality, which was a lot of the work that I did on the book. You know, so that's one good example.
The book brings clarity and detail to every aspect of the world's worst civilian nuclear accident. It also brings into focus the root cause behind it, which was the faulty design of the reactor. After reading the book, one can't help but feel sympathy for some of those who were blamed and convicted for the accident. Higginbotham said that the three people sentenced to prison for 10 years, including the then plant director Viktor Brukhanov, who the author met later for interviews, were made scapegoats.
He was one of, you know, a handful of scapegoats that the people in the nuclear industry and the Communist Party wanted to hold publicly responsible for what happened, because they needed to find people who they could blame in public, because they knew that the real causes of the accident lay in the design of the reactor, and that Brukhanov himself was simply an administrator. And although he cut corners in his job, much as other Soviet managers did in all sorts of industries at the time, he was not really to blame for what happened. All of these men, you know, Brukhanov, Dyatlov, Akimov, Toptanov, who were in the control room at the time of the test, you know, they were all operating in the dark because they didn't really understand the dangers of the technology that they're working with. They didn't understand the inherent dangers in the reactor. They hadn't been fully informed about the problems that could develop if they contravened the regulations that govern the operation of the reactor. They didn't understand how serious the consequences could be, and many of them simply believed that an accident of the scale that happened was simply impossible.
The author also narrates the story of Maria Protsenko, who was the chief architect of Pripyat, the city that housed workers of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. Protsenko played a crucial role in the evacuation of Pripyat residents after the explosion. Higginbotham writes about a memorable incident during one of his meetings with Protsenko.
I met Maria a number of times over the course of several years because it took a long time to talk to her about her whole story. She's had a fascinating life. And at one of these meetings, she brought not only her identity cards, but also a notebook that she had kept and maintained during her time working in the exclusion zone in the months after the accident. She, at one point during the conversation, she was leafing through it and reading the entries from it, and then she said, "It still smells of rain, it still smells of ozone caused by the ionization of the air caused by radioactivity." And she said, "Here, you can smell it, it still smells like the air after a rainstorm." And I was like, "Oh, I'm not sure I can." And then she just blew the dust out of the pages of the notebook straight into my face. And yes, of course I was slightly alarmed given what she told me about. I don't think I'd be normal if I hadn't. But of course she assured me this is absolutely fine, although I don't know to this day whether that's true or not.
Although it has been more than 33 years since the incident, Higginbotham said there are important lessons from Chernobyl that are still relevant today.
The principal lesson is one of the perils of technological hubris. It's similar to the lessons of the Titanic disaster. You know, the operators of the White Star Line convinced everybody involved with the Titanic project that they built an unsinkable ship. And in the same way as that, the leaders of the Soviet nuclear industry had convinced everyone that the Soviet nuclear industry was among the safest in the world and the RBMK reactor was extremely safe to operate. And so the operators in the control room, you know, approached the reactor with a level of recklessness and disregard for nuclear safety that I don't think they would have done under other circumstances. And similarly, the heads of the nuclear industry were extremely reckless about the effects of radiation because they themselves had been on the sharp end of this stuff for decades, and they perceived it as being something that you could just live with. The approach was extremely different to that in the West, where, you know, concern for nuclear safety and radiation safety was extremely high. I just think that they just thought that they could get away with anything. And that kind of arrogance in regard to high technology like this is still with us today. And people do not think carefully enough, I don't think, about the way in which technology has become insidiously knitted into the fabric of our lives. And whether it be with artificial intelligence or any of these other much higher technologies, not engineering technology, but computer technology, I think those are the things that we need to beware of now.
Dhananjay Khadilkar, RFI, Paris.